Giranagari is a very special place where there's no cell reception. Somebody's phone is ringing. It's a mystical place. But if that was your phone that was ringing, do something so it doesn't do it again. Empathic communication in Srimad Bhagavatam. If you remember from the first lecture and then repeated it a few times, there are three elements to empathy or compassion: a cognitive, an affective, and a motivational component or element. You understand, you wish to understand, and to whatever capacity can understand the feelings and the needs and the internal life of another person. You have an affective response to that. It's not just something you feel, it's recognizing what their feelings are, and to some degree, to some empathic way, some way of appreciating their suffering. And you want to do something. A very nice example of this Srimad Bhagavatam empathy, it comes right away in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where Vyasadeva, who has the capacity to see into the future or into the past or at present flawlessly, that's pretty remarkable. He looked into the future and he saw Kali Yuga. So there was a cognitive, there was an affective, and there was a, he did something about it. He took all the Vedas that were in a sound vibration form and he compiled them. And not just according to our Vedic literature. At the end of every Dwarpa Yuga, there's a person, it's not always the same person, it's a different person, who takes that function. He compiles the Vedas, divides them into four. Veda Vyas, that's the meaning of his name. Veda Vyas. So the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is then the culmination of that work. All of the Vedas and culminating in Srimad Bhagavatam. Within the Bhagavatam, one of the key personalities that shows this quality of empathy or compassion is Narada Muni. And sometimes that empathy looks, how's that, empathic? But specifically with the case of the sons of Kuvera, pictured here, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they were so intoxicated literally, as well as intoxicated with pride. There's a wonderful section I like very much. Shukadeva Goswami is revealing the heart and the mind of Narada, the contemplation, what's best for these two? These two are, they're out of it. And how to help them? What's the cause of their being like they are? Offensive and wildly intoxicated and blindly proud, and the cause is, sounded like a peacock. Sounded like, whoops. Excuse me. Thank Krishna. It's because of their pride. And so they're proud of this and that. And what's best is to relieve them of this and that. because then their pride will be deflated. But then I want the best for them. I want to give them love for Krishna. But in this condition, they're not ready for anything like that. So they need to be relieved of such condition and then give them love for Krishna. So that's what he did. The benediction was that they would become delivered by Krishna and become pure devotees. But in between this and that was they would become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and stand there for a long time, motionless, waiting for that moment when their pride was gone and Krishna would deliver them. And sure enough, to uphold the word of Narada, Krishna delivered them. And when they went back to the kingdom of Kuvera, they went back pure devotees instead of like this. That's the manifestation of Narada's empathy with those two. And here's another. In the sixth canto Bhagavatam, there's a description of King Chitraketu, who was overly attached, like super overly attached to the idea. I mean, there was a religious idea, but it was obsessive. The religious idea was, I'm a king and it's one of my duties to provide a successor to the throne, and that means I have to have a son who can be the successor to the throne. And there was no son, and he was despondent. So despondent, so filled with lamentation, that Narada's friend Angira decided, let's relieve him of his attachment so that he can hear transcendental knowledge, the way he gives transcendental knowledge. Reminding us of some question. What about something that's not directly giving someone Krishna consciousness? Now, if you're qualified like Angira, then you can do things like that. He made an arrangement that he could have a son by some yajnic performance. But shortly after the son was born, the son was then killed by the envious co-wives. And when the king discovered the son was killed or dead, oh, his happiness became even greater distress. Just at the right time, Angira and Narada came, and then Angira, then he gave transcendental knowledge. Narada followed with more transcendental knowledge, and then the life of devotion. And the king got it. And then Narada spoke to the dead son and said, my dear boy, just look. See how despondent your father is. Be kind and compassionate to him. Using our language for the, he has a need. Be kind to him and recognize his need and be his son. Hearing that, the departed soul of the son entered back in the body, sat up, and directly spoke to Narada. Didn't even look at his father and said, who is my father? I've had so many fathers, this father, that father, so many fathers. Yeah, this past lifetime it was that one, but, you know, who is my father anyway? And a long explanation of you're not the body and bodily relations are not who we really are. And I was with my eternal father and you called me back? I'm going back. Chalo. Hasta la vista. See you later, Charlie. And he laid back down and he was gone. to like reinforce what he had, what the king had already understood. And so what happened? Just like that slide that we showed three times, he completely changed. He became a transformed King Triticetu. He went and engaged in devotional service, and in his very same body, he attained a heavenly planet, and he became the head of the heavenly planet. Vidyadhara Loka is like a very elevated place. Then some other things happened. But Narada's compassion was upon the king, as was Angira's compassion upon the king, to relieve him of the misconception, restore the spiritual conception, and ultimately the bhakti. That's amazing compassion. We don't have such power. We can't bring somebody back from the dead and have them talk and then say goodbye again. But Narada is very powerful in all regards. Now, one of my heroes, I have a few of them, but one of them is Prahlad. And in prayers, God's prayers, it's chapter 9 of Canto 7. I don't think I brought it. Too bad. Well, it's prayers to Lord Nrisingadev. Who has anybody on the bookshelf back there, Canto 7, chapter 9, or somebody has a handheld device? Canto 7, chapter 9. Look at that. Text 41, 42, 43. This is better than a printout. Okay. The chapter summary, at the beginning of chapter 9, there's a chapter summary, and it speaks about the compassion of Prahlad and his desire to not be delivered alone, like some people wish they just leave and go to the forest and live in the Himalayas or whatever they do, undergo austerities to detach themselves from the temporary and try to enter into transcendence. Not interested. Prahlad is not interested. Although he recognizes there are some that do that. He, this starting at text 41, he speaks some words of appreciation of Lord Nrisingadev and then says, indeed we have fallen into this river, the river of death, and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. So that's the cognitive part. But it's we, not just they. Now kindly look upon us, not only me, but also upon all others who are suffering, and everyone that has a material body and mind suffer. And by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us. Text 42. Glorification, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, etc. In delivering the fallen souls, what is difficult for you who manage the affairs of the universe in delivering the fallen souls engaged in your devotional service? You are the friend of all suffering humanity. And for great personalities, it is necessary to show mercy to the foolish, people like me. Therefore, I think that you will show your causeless mercy to persons like us who engage in your devotional service. And then text 43. Oh, best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals, strong words, who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. Next verse. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet. Now, this is the compassion of a Vaishnav. Exactly as we heard Srila Prabhupada explaining, he's as taking the words of Prahlad Maharaj from the Bhagavatam. The meditation for a Vaishnava is, the phrase that we heard Lakshmimoni recite that Prabhupada would say over and over, that the contemplation of a Vaishnava is that everyone should be happy. Chant and be happy. Let them be happy. There's a Sanskrit phrase that says that. Let them be happy. Everyone should be happy. And that, you know, what is happiness? Just to like put that in big letters. When visiting in China not so long ago, one of the places I went to I'd never been before. In fact, I didn't even know how to pronounce it. Chengdu. And the person, one of the programs was organized by a yoga studio owner, and it was for her staff, and they had uniforms. You know, it's China, so the yoga teachers had this uniform, and the host and hostesses and the reception desk people had another uniform, and their office staff had another uniform. I learned that just because I asked them, what is all this uniform thing? Explained. And then one of the topics that she selected, there was a long menu, and she selected one of helping how to overcome depression. So I asked, why did you select that one? In front of all of her students. And she stood up. Very articulate lady. She said, I interact on a personal level with all of my staff, and I know them all personally, and they're all suffering. Anxiety, not depression, anxiety. They're all suffering. But part of the problem, the major part of the problem is they don't know what happiness is. I mean, she's saying this in front of they have a different idea, a wrong idea of what happiness is, and when they don't reach that happiness, they feel some anxiety. So I wanted to hear, you're a teacher, what do you have to say about it? How do you, through meditation, how do you overcome anxiety? You must have a different conception of what happiness is. I want to hear about that. I think it'd be good for my staff to hear about that. I said, wow, what an introduction. So Prahlad Maharaj knows, so I referred this yoga studio owner to Prahlad Maharaj's prayers and some other things too, because it's available in Chinese and she can read it. And she spoke English reasonably well, but easier to read in her language. Cognitive, affective, motivational. But he knows, Prahlad knows, I can't do this. That's one of the problems that we have. We think, I can do this. Prahlad knows he can't do that. He can be an instrument, but the real person who can free persons from their anxiety or their unhappiness or their material condition is the personality of Godhead. And if he shows his mercy, and who does he show his mercy to? Those who the instruments direct his mercy to. Doesn't it make sense? Mercy flows down. So all that the devotees of Krishna need to do is be compassionate. Not our own, I'm compassionate. Not like that. It's the instrument of Krishna's compassion, and it flows down. And as we heard, that last slide three times, amazing on anything we could even think of. How is it going to happen? We don't know. It's not our, that's Krishna's service or Krishna's position is to decide how that flow of mercy and compassion, his mercy, his compassion will come. We have to be discriminating of how we interact with others, certainly, but how that mercy is going to manifest, that's up to Krishna. Another nice example from the Bhagavatam is Maharaj Ambarish clasping his feet here, or a great yogi, significant, is he's a king and he's a brahmana, mystic yogi brahmana, Durvasa Muni. Powerful, extraordinarily powerful, clasping the feet of the devotee king. Because he understands, I've offended him, and this intense Sudarshan Chakra, like a localized atomic bomb, is really hot and burning. So he begs forgiveness from Ambarish and asks him, please do something to take this Sudarshan away. So there's beautiful prayers that are very interesting to read if you want to know some details about what is Sudarshan anyways. There's details, details and details in the verses and the purports. And the conclusion he offers to Sudarshan, if there's anything I or our entire family have done for many generations that have earned us pious credits, I hereby transfer all those pious credits to Durvasa Muni. He who tried to kill me, I transfer all of our pious credits to him, and on the basis of that piety, you please relieve him from this burning activity. Pardon him. I mean, he's already pardoned him. It was already done, but you please pardon him. So that's what happened. Sudarshan receded. And Durvasa Muni was, it was a hot one, but you saved me. And they became actually very dear friends, although one is a king and the other is a, super powerful Muni. He stayed for some time in Ambarish's kingdom and they would have their meals. Of course, the king would sit at the feet of the Muni while the Muni took his, and then the Muni would give the remnants of his food to the king, and they were enjoying life together. Before that, it was, the Muni was envious. I'm a big guy. I'm Durvasa Muni. And he's a little guy. He's a king. And he gets more respect than me. So I want to do something about this. And he learned a lesson. That's what he did. He got a nice lesson by Krishna's mercy and the mercy of the Vaishnava. So the interest was, there was an understand, the cognitive, affective, and motivational element to Ambarish Maharaj's interaction with Durvasa Muni. There's many, 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 but I'm having a good time, this, because I like the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Jed Bharat number 3, or Bharat Maharaj became a deer, became Jed Bharat, and Jed Bharat appeared to a dullard, an avaduta, a madman, and qualified with a strong body to carry the palanquin of the king. And so when he was carrying the palanquin of the king, he was being really careful not to step on any ants, and the king was getting jostled upstairs in the palanquin, and the king insulted him twice. And then Judd Barrett decided, I'm going to retaliate. No, he didn't say that. He decided to give him transcendental knowledge. And there's chapters and chapters and chapters and chapters. The illustration is he's describing the forest of material enjoyment because the king was thinking, I'm the enjoyer of being the king. I am this body, this time around at least, I'm a king, and everyone should obey me. So there. Ishwar above. And Judd Barrett put a few holes in that one. And what he was left with was transcendental knowledge. So very, very careful, amazing, detailed description of the forest of material enjoyment, and the king became purified. So he understood the king's problem. He felt for the king. He felt for the king in this way. Prior to the king, he didn't speak to anybody anything. It was as if deaf and dumb, purposefully. He wasn't deaf and dumb. He just didn't want to, he learned his lesson. Don't get mixed with the material energy. You can have a problem. So he was staying away. But when he saw, whatever he saw within the king, he decided, okay, I'm going to give him some transcendental knowledge. And boy, did he give him transcendental knowledge. The king was squeaky and a great devotee. Vidura, after his long pilgrimage, Vidura, hearing from Maitreya till he became a Uttama, Bhagavat, perfected devotee, going all the way back to Hastinapur to do one thing, to deliver his elder brother who had a disease, the disease of attachment. His attachment was so terrible that he was willing to look the other way while his son Duryodhana did the most abominable things to his full acknowledgement, but he remained silent. So he was part of very bad things, attempted murder multiple times and so on. So Vidura came back and he spoke very compassionately. My elder brother, you're living like a kept dog in the house of Bhima, living off the scraps from his plate. Have you no shame? He was so puffed with thinking, well, I'm king. He was never king, but he was in this illusion, I'm king. When he was being just handled by the mercy of those who killed his 100 sons, righteously, dharmically, but anyway, he spoke very strongly because it was required. He had tried many other ways of speaking and didn't work. He was deaf. He didn't say, I don't understand. He said, I understand, but I can't follow what you're saying. I'm too attached. So he cut his attached transcendental Dhritarashtra. Instead of attaining a hellish existence after this life, he achieved at least freedom from his sinful reactions and elevation to heavenly planets. Didn't go back to Godhead. He wasn't a devotee. And there's many, many, many nice examples, wonderful examples, and now we're going to move on to Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he's Mahavadanyaya, the most munificent, because he gave Krishna prema. And we're going to tell a little story about the Brahmana. That's just a Brahmana from Google. It's not the one that Lord Chaitanya met. He was on tour in South India, and he came to a Brahmana's house. Well, the Brahmana was chanting Ram's name continuously. Ram. Just like Valmiki. Rama. Rama. He was a Ram Bhakta. And he invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come to his place for lunch. He agreed. And then when Lord Chaitanya went to have his lunch, there was no lunch. And so Lord Chaitanya said, "My dear Brahmana, what is your intention?" Nice way to say it, like, "What is your intention?" And the Brahmana said, "Sita and Lakshman have gone to the forest to gather wild fruits and roots, and soon they'll be back. And as soon as they return, I'll prepare your lunch." And Lord Chaitanya could understand this was a meditation. No, it's a type of bhakti. It's a meditation. You know, we also do practically, but this particular Brahmana, it was a practice of his. He was in a spontaneous stage of devotion, and in his mind he was gathering the ingredients, or Lakshman was gathering the ingredients. So Lord Chaitanya chanted some extra rounds. When lunch was ready, Lord Chaitanya accepted the lunch and asked the Brahmana, "Now, you please eat remnants." And the man, the Brahmana, said, "I'm fasting." Another meditation. How can I eat? How can I maintain my existence when Sita has been kidnapped by Ravana and she's suffering terribly at the hands of Ravana? How can I even maintain my life in that condition? I'm fasting until death. And Lord Chaitanya said, "My dear Brahmana, I assure you that Sita was not directly touched by Ravana. It's not possible. So please give up this mood and take your meal." Just on his say-so, this Brahmana, continuously chanting Ram's name, accepted his instruction. And if you look in a map, because somebody showed me on a map, where the Brahmana was, okay, here's a map of India, kind of goes down to a point, and over here is where the Brahmana resided. Way down here is where Lord Chaitanya found the text of the Purana that tells she wasn't kidnapped. He went all the way back by foot. No train, no taxi, no bus, certainly no airplane. Just to give a copy of that text to the Brahmana and explained, "Here, you keep this." It explains that Amaya Sita was taken. There's Sita and Ravana. She's throwing the jewels, ornaments from the chariot. The Kishkinda Vanaras found it. So it was Amaya Sita that was taken by Ravana. And the Maya Sita, after Sita entered into the fire, the Maya Sita returned into the fire. That was the one that was kidnapped by Ravan. And the true Sita came emerging from the fire. There's Agni returning Sita to Ram because he took care of her while Ravana had the Maya Sita. And so, as I told you, rest assured, Sita was not taken, not possible for the internal potency to be touched by such a demon as Ravana. Here's the scriptural reference to verify it. Now please be peaceful. And the Brahmana, instead of chanting Ram's name, was incessantly chanting Krishna's name. And he asked the Brahmin, what happened? You were always chanting Ram's name, now you're chanting Krishna's name. And he said, it's by your influence. Just by your, you didn't ask me to chant Krishna's name, but just by your influence, my tongue doesn't find any other sound vibration than Krishna's name. That's Mahavadanyaya. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He understood the pain. He felt something about that pain. He helped relieve it and brought him ultimate happiness. There's Sita and Agni and Ram with a mustache. That's not a correct painting, but it's a nice painting otherwise. There's demigods watching up here. He's a Bengali artist. What are you going to do? Looking at Parmarupa. This is the son. Amoga was the son of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Huh? Son-in-law. Very good. Thank you. Son-in-law. Thank you. Son-in-law. And the son-in-law was offending Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's details, but I'm not going to go in. Well, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to offer a very nice meal. So he constructed a special place right next to the kitchen, only one entrance into the place where Lord Chaitanya would take his meal, from the kitchen to where Lord Chaitanya would take his meal. And the son-in-law, Amoga, snuck in and started criticizing Lord Chaitanya for eating so much. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya heard him speaking, and he came with a stick ready to whack him. And his son-in-law went running for his life, and he was younger, he could outrun Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But because of his offense, he came down with a terrible disease, intense fever, and he was about to die. And Lord Chaitanya asked, where is Amoga? I haven't seen him around. Oh, he should die. He's in this fender to you. So Lord Chaitanya went to him and very compassionately placed his hand on the heart of Amoga and said, Amoga, you're a brahmana, and brahmanas carry the Supreme Lord in their heart, and you should give up all envy, because envy blocks you from being in the aware position of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, in your heart. Your brahminical qualities will all be destroyed. Amoga, please give this up and become a lover of Krishna. And just like that, a miracle cure, his fever broke, and his envy was gone, and he became an elevated devotee. And when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya found out about that, he said, you should have let him die. He was an offender. Why'd you do that? He said, because he's related to you. You're my dear devotee, and so he gets delivered too. Pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another miracle cure was in the beginning stages of Lord Chaitanya's South India tour. At Kurmakshetra, he spent time with one brahmana named Kurma Brahman, and there's a nice deity called a Kurma deity, very interesting, at Kurmakshetra, triple Kurmas. And there was a brahmana who really wanted Lord Chaitanya's association, but he had a very severe case of leprosy and he felt himself unfit. So he refrained from going to see Lord Chaitanya during his Kurmakshetra. And Early the next morning, Lord Chaitanya began his journey to the next destination, and around that time, Vasudev wanted so badly to see Lord Chaitanya, went anyway, but when he got there to the home of Kurma Brahmana, he found out Lord Chaitanya just left. And he fell to the ground weeping and crying. Oh, how unfortunate. I missed Lord Chaitanya's association. Lord Chaitanya, being in the heart of all living entities, he did a U-turn. He came back to the home of Kurma Brahman to give his mercy to Vasudev the Brahman, and he picked him up and embraced him so warmly that, as you see, you can't see it so well from a distance, but there's blood on his sores, his really yucky body, leprosy at a very advanced degree, and his body became whole again. Golden in complexion and young looking, and the Brahmana's words were, "You have not only saved me from my condition of leprosy, but you have embraced me. And my only prayer is that I never become proud of the fact that I've received some mercy from you. May I always remain humble in the mood of eternal service unto your lotus feet." Very beautiful. And that's one of his first stops in a South India tour. Compassion upon Vasudev the Brahmana. Very lengthy, several chapters long, detailed description of King Prataparudra and his eagerness to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And Lord Chaitanya put obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And he never lost his determination or his humility. He remained determined to somehow receive the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the end, Mahaprabhu gave his mercy. As you see in this painting, the circumstance, it was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's transcendental guidance, saying that when the Rath Yatra cart reaches the Jagannath Vallabh garden, the carts will stop, Lord Chaitanya's associates will go into the garden to take some rest because of dancing and dancing, and when he's there, don't go in your royal outfit. Go dressed in simple Vaishnava attire and recite verses from the Bhagavatam, and he gave him verses to recite from the Bhagavatam. So from memory, he is reciting verses from the Bhagavatam. Very beautiful prayers. Lord Chaitanya, hearing the prayers as he was very expertly massaging his legs, which were stiff from the dancing and dancing and dancing, Lord Chaitanya asked, "Who are you? You are my dearmost friend because you're reminding me of Krishna." And the king replied, "I'm the insignificant servant of the servant of the servant of your servants." Go on speaking, go on speaking. So King Pratap, after much obstacle and obstacle and obstacle, the obstacles were not to tell the king, although it sounded like it. It was to intensify his hankering and overcome those obstacles through that intensified hankering, and he got a 4.0. With the Mayavadi sannyasis in Benares, to recognizing one of their difficulties, which was pride, he decided to defeat their pride in two ways. with such extreme humility, they were overwhelmed with the extremity of his humility. Here's their assembly hall, and common in India is before entering an assembly hall, there's a foot bath area, and you wash your feet in the foot bath area before you enter the hall. So he washed his feet at the foot bath area and then sat down, which is an unclean place. But he sat down, and the head sannyasi, Prakashananda Saraswati, came and was requesting Lord Chaitanya, come sit with us. You're a sannyasi. You're a Bharati sannyas. You're initiated in our Mayavadi line here, so come sit with us. Lord Chaitanya said, no, I'm not qualified. You people are so qualified, I'll have to sit here by the footbath. So he overcame his pride by his humility, and he showed his Brahmajyoti effulgence. And Mayavadis really like Brahmajyoti effulgence. So he let him have it. Just what they were looking for. And he was the source of it. And one other example, this is a painting. I don't know exactly what he looked like, but Vallabha Bhatta. Anyone here from Gujarat? So you know Vallabhacharya. And Vallabhacharya was a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Did you know that? You didn't know that. They were contemporary. They associated in three different times during their lives. And one of them was in Jagannath Puri. So when Vallabha came to pay a visit to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, by that time, he was a very renowned Vaishnava and very skilled in many, many ways. And without the details, because it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita that you read it, he wanted to get, as we will sometimes want to get, the recognition of another Vaishnava. And since he was looking up to Lord Chaitanya, he was especially interested in getting Lord Chaitanya's recognition and appreciation and acknowledgement and like that. Lord Chaitanya saw that, that was the cognition part, and so he was not very pleased with that tendency for pride. And so in various ways, very interesting ways, he removed the pride from Vallabhacharya's heart. And not to say that he was an ordinary fellow or anything like that, just he was an exalted person, even at that time, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like to see in exalted devotees this tendency of pride. And so he very compassionately, very expertly relieved him of that. Very beautiful description. Multiple times. Different exchanges. One of them was, he had written a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam that he declared to Lord Chaitanya, it surpasses the commentary of Sridhar Swami. Now, Lord Chaitanya had said, Sridhar Swami is the authority on Srimad Bhagavatam. He's the final word. Now, there's a little detail. I think we have some time for some detail. I want to end on time, though. So, a detail is, Sridhar Swami came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, obviously, but he came after Shankaracharya, chronologically. And Shankaracharya wrote an ashtakam glorifying Krishna, referring to pastimes of Krishna that are only found in Srimad Bhagavatam and not any other Puranic text, which means that he was familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam. But he never made commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Rather, he was glorifying Krishna from pastimes of Krishna from the Bhagavatam. So, the followers, successive generations of Lord Chaitanya, of Shankaracharya, they knew that he liked Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, the scholarly ones, they knew it. And so Sridhar Swami, this is our Gaudiya understanding, Jiva Goswami confirms something essentially like this. He had a strategy. What's that? He would write a commentary on Srimad, actually, historically, one of Shankaracharya's followers made a Mayavad commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, but it was lost. Whew. So then, Swami made a commentary that had some sections that sounded like Shankara's impersonal teaching, and the 95% of it was Vaishnava. It was a strategy, because if it was all Vaishnava, we're not interested. So there were some passages that they would be attracted to and then become inoculated. It was a strategy. So when Jiva Goswami makes reference to Sridhar Swami's commentary on Bhagavatam, it's one of the principal authorities in his Sandarbhas, but he says only when it's in line with our Vaishnava teachings, which means he left the other stuff to the side. Ballabha didn't want to do that. He wanted to write a commentary better than Sridhar Swami's commentary. So he asked Lord Chaitanya, would you like to hear it? Better than Sridhar Swami's. And Lord Chaitanya said, one who is not faithful to a Swami is a prostitute. Because one of the meanings of Swami is husband, and one who is married to someone that are not faithful to their husband, they're like a prostitute. And so he was really sad. So what did he do? He went to Gadadhar Pandit, who was soft. You know, sometimes compassionate is soft without proper discrimination. Sometimes. So, recognizing Ballabha as an elevated Vaishnava and Gadadhar Pandit being known as a reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam, would you like to hear my commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam? Don't say no, say yes. So he couldn't say no, and he couldn't say yes. So he just sat there like totally uncomfortable as Ballabha was reciting his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And finally, Gadadhar went to Lord Chaitanya and cried, what am I to do? I'm in this fix. Lord Chaitanya relieved him of that anxiety. But one should not hear the Bhagavatam for those who don't have a proper understanding of this disciplic succession and the weight that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Sridhar Swami and his qualification for speaking in writing commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And many passages that our acharyas make reference to, they're really insightful. Very brilliant. So in many ways, our most munificent Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mercifully gave his association to Ballabha, who gave up that pride. At the end, his pride was broken. Something similar to Indra and his pride or whatever. Lord Chaitanya does not like pride in the heart of the devotee, however qualified. That's the last slide. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, certainly by the congregational chanting, but also his very personalized interactions with his associates and the devotees in Jagannath Puri and elsewhere, this South India tour and so many other places. He extended compassion, very, very customized, very personalized, for each devotee's need. There's many. Sanatana Goswami, so many. Rupa Goswami, Haridas Thakur, so many ways he gave to each devotee his special, special compassion. So, a summary, I spent today expressing to him as I've been expressing to all of you. I really like the effort that he has made to become very familiar with these techniques. I'm not doing the techniques, I'm doing the cheerleader role. Rah, rah. Empathic communication. Go team, go. But, it's so helpful. It's very practical. And then in our discussion, you know, applying is another thing. Understanding the concepts, okay, that's the cognitive. And then the effective, okay, I feel that this is good stuff. And then, what about practical application? And we all meet challenges. I don't even have to ask for a show of hands, somebody that's never experienced. We all have it. And it's, you know, it's a lot. How to address ourselves in an effective way. Remaining truthful, not compromising standards of truth, but doing so in a way that we're truly understanding what another person's needs are, as we understand what our needs are, and we're in an effective, connected relationship with others. It's a Kali Yuga challenge, because it's really at a drop of a hat, quarrel, no problem. And how do you do differently? That's a challenge. You have to make the heart clean. Developing a spiritual conception. Hearing about our great souls and taking inspiration from them. Your favorite role model personalities. And even just the message itself. Hearing the Bhagavatam is purifying. Hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita is purifying. We need lots of purification. And we need lots of effort. We need lots of mercy and we need lots of effort. He who strives by right means is guaranteed of success, Krishna says. So may you all be successful. At least steps in the direction of that success. Or it's at least it's progress. Progress, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. I'll say it again. Progress is a series of small steps in the right direction. You just need to know what the right direction is. And we need to be willing to take some small steps. Don't be complacent. So when we leave here, this is kind of like predictable reality. Some will give mindful effort to apply some of this for a little while and then it'll kind of fade. Because we'll get too busy in doing things that are really important. And very few will, you know, go more deeply with it, at least some of the elements and work with them. And some it'll be, you know, just kind of like fade quickly. So therefore there's recordings and you can go back and hear again. And then you can go read his book or that we sent out the little summaries of the book and go back and do a refresher. Have some kind of application intention from what you've heard and how you'd like to apply it. Then make an effort to stay with it. Give it 3 weeks. I mean, longer, but give it 3 weeks. Something that you want to do that will you stay with for 3 weeks. See what happens. Become happy. Instrument for others becoming happy, spiritually happy, not the other kind, spiritually happy. So any discussion?
Just wanted to check whether my understanding is correct. So far what we have been discussing is through the needs we are getting into the feelings, I'm sorry, through the observations we are getting into the feelings and then leading to the needs, and then...
I think you better ask Bir Krishnamurti this question tomorrow during questions and answers. I'm not on the process.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my...
So I'm trying to actually combine what I've been hearing in his presentation and what I heard just now.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
And then we come up with a strategy to fulfill those needs and also facilitate others' needs to be fulfilled. But from this presentation, what I got is because you're bringing the cognitive, affective, and motivational element, so it is not just about just... Because in this strategy, there is cognitive and the affective piece, but the motivational piece will probably allow to even purify the needs further when we are...
Well, Krishna gives intelligence how to, and also strength to do the how to, and that takes purity. You're trying to put the two models together. That's what you're doing?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. I'm just trying to see that
it
is not just about fulfilling the or facilitation of fulfillment of others' needs, but it's also to purify those needs, and that comes into picture
because of the
motivational component.
And let's go another step. You know, that Krishna should be pleased by that. Their intention, internal, intrinsic intention to please Krishna is, and without that, the other is stop and go. You know, it's intermittent. Antavatu palam tesham. It's limited and temporary.
So,
I felt that was my role, is doing the, let's get to the spiritual objective of all of this, the spiritual support, purpose. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I'm glad that you spoke about the practicality.
About which one?
The practicality of nonviolent communication.
Okay.
Because I wrote a lot of notes last year, and it was very challenging to practice it. So I feel like, although I read some of his book, it's like I'm starting at square one again.
Okay. Okay.
And so, like, before I came here, I was thinking, okay, so how am I going to use this stuff in my day-to-day life?
Good.
Right? That's what I was thinking.
Good.
And it's honestly, I feel like a big thing because we can understand it, but how are we going to use it, right? And so that's my big thing is like, how am I going to implement this, in my,
Well, here's, you wanted some good news? You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. What the next event is designed to help in that department. It's not like, you know, the solution, but role play, how do you practically apply? Here's what it doesn't look like. Here's what it looked like. Here's what it feels like when you do it. Mm. And here's another example. Here's by example, we can understand the precept. Mm. That's the intention of what's coming next.
Well, you said, you know, try to refresh your mind for 3 weeks, refresh yourself, refresh. So I'm going to also just try to do that. Like, just keep listening to it. Maybe it'll like
go
in my head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's like learning. It's not like a motor skill, like learning to ride a bicycle. That's, you know, motor skills, eventually you can ride a bicycle after practice. You may take a few spills, but you can ride a bicycle if you have that motor skill. This is something that's deeper. It's something that's already there. That was, you know, the from the heart message. It's locked up inside. And as we access that, then it becomes natural. So the behaviors can be aligned with that. It's not just that. Practice the behaviors like a motor skill. It's not something that's outside. It's something that's literally inside. And this is what it will look like. And these are the affective elements of you're considering your needs and the needs of the other persons, and how do you find a strategy to meet them, etc., etc. But the power, the spiritual power, is the power of bhakti. That's what drives it.
I feel like it's almost like you have to, it's like you're reformatting your mind in a sense. Like bhakti, as you chant, things just reformat.
Yeah.
Like naturally.
Yes.
But with this, it's like, okay, so how am I going to apply this, right? And then you try and you fail, right? Because you react. And you're like, oh man, that didn't work. So then you try again. And you just keep trying. And it's just like, it's like you have to literally, change the language of how you're...
Well, the behaviors will need the support of humility and tolerance. And humility and tolerance are naturally there, the qualities of one who has devotion for Krishna. Mai chananya yogena bhaktiravya vichari, in language of Bhagavad Gita, undivided devotion to Krishna, which comes by guru padashraya, or acharyo upasana, worship of the spiritual master. So that's the spiritual connection. And as the spiritual connection is strong, then all these things that you learned, that gives it life. And without giving it life, practice is, it's abstract to a degree. It's not like how we live our life, because we live our life by the modes of nature. And this is, you know, a higher position, at least the mode of goodness, and fueled by so. I hear what you're saying. When I go back to New York City, people aren't compassionate. And I'm supposed to, like, cultivate compassion and empathic communication with ruffians. How am I going to do that? Practically, how am I going to do that? Yes?
Yes, yes, but you gave me something, like just listen to it again and again and again and again.
Yes, you know? You'll become familiar with the principles and the concepts, and as you're, it can help you apply your bhakti shakti in practical ways that look like this and look like that. And you'll feel Krishna connection and soul to soul connection and empathic connection with others. You know, of course, depending upon you and your time, place, circumstance, and the other person, because this question was raised earlier. What about if the other person doesn't enter your concern? You're like trying to be in a spiritual space with somebody who doesn't have any sense of that. Challenges, no doubt. It's Kali Yuga, no doubt. It's not one, two, three, but it's a path to move on. And it's going to take a while in our lives individually and in, you know, collectively. But look at the bigger picture of collectively, if we can learn this and become more effective at it, it's going to make an impact on the quality of life, ourselves and collectively. That's the practical, as far as I'm concerned. Improving the quality of life and bring us closer to being happy and being instruments of others' happiness in the transcendental sense. The Krishna connection happiness. The soul to soul connection happiness.
Thank you.
Somebody behind you? Who else had their hand up? Okay.
Just want a clarification. This was from the earlier class. You were speaking about the Vishaya and Ashraya.
Speaking about?
Vishaya and Ashraya.
Ah.
Krishna is the Vishaya and so are his devotees, because devotees hold Krishna in their heart.
Yes.
So that's the soul-to-soul connection. Is that right?
That was what?
That's the soul-to-soul connection you were talking about?
No. That was a detail. That was a Jiva Goswami detail. That was okay. Just like a detail. It was literally an embellishment.
Okay.
The embellishment had to do with Kunti's statement, let the affection, the rati that I have for the Pandavas and Vrishnis be taken, and there's only rati for you. It's his way of explaining what that meant. Okay. So I added, because it was a nice embellishment, but the essence is Krishna is the object of our love. That's the Vishaya. And we're the abode of love in our regard for the object of love. So this other was just an embellishment. He was saying it's not possible. It was said in other words also, but it's not possible to say, oh, let the Pandavas and Vrishnis disappear. I don't mind. Because their abodes, they're carrying Krishna. They're also Vishayas, so how can it be? So that's not what she meant. It was just his philosophical explanation of that's not what she meant. There's other ways of saying that's not what she meant also. But it's a philosophical way of saying it. Is that clear?
Yes. So when we deal with others, the soul-to-soul connection in a cognitive sense would be to understand that the person I'm dealing with, even if they are not devotees,
yes,
is that they are a spirit soul. That's,
yes,
the cognitive element.
Yes. That's the essence. That's this intrinsic worth message also. They're parts of Krishna. That's the intrinsic worth. The covering is something else. Here's a diamond that has dirt, mud, whatever. But inside there's a diamond. That's the intrinsic worth. So polish the diamond and you get the diamond because there's a diamond inside. So the intrinsic worth of all living entities is they're Krishna's.
So can I say that once I have the cognitive element, then it will percolate down to affective and the motivational that,
yes,
you were talking about?
Okay. Yes. And we want to align ourselves with scripture and guru and sadhu. With that qualifier, yes. Yes. And it, you know, initially it starts with like a concept, a notion. Well, that's an interesting idea. And I don't live that way, but it's an interesting idea. And then gradually it's like this prior discussion. That's it. I like that idea, but it's foreign to me. It's not like how I live my life and how people around me live their lives, and I have no reinforcement for it. And I don't even really know what it looks like other than I remember some of our role play on Saturday night or Sunday night. And that was nice. And then I go back to New York and it's something else. So, but it's that, you know, the soul is intrinsic, so bhakti is intrinsic and all these skills, they're intrinsic. It's just giving it clarity, language, explanation, a procedure, you know, sambandha abhideya prayojana. But the basis and support is the intrinsic worth of the living entity, this inherent in the heart of the little bug crawling across the floor. There's a spirit soul, and within that spirit soul, this inherent inclination to please Krishna. He just forgot. Big time. So he's got a bug body.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just one comment. This aspect of cognitive, affective, and motivational hit home for me because, as I was telling you earlier in my Waldorf training,
yes,
we hear about thinking, feeling, and willing. And in that training, they try to train children in all the three aspects. And it just somehow seemed to align for me. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. We have 4 minutes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. One of the examples that you mentioned from Bhagavatam in today's class is Vidura.
Vidura, yeah.
Vidura. And you mentioned that initially he was speaking softly with Dhritarashtra, but Dhritarashtra was not listening and he had to speak strongly. So my question is, in certain near and dear relationships, even when we try to implement empathic communication, the other person may not listen. And when one is not sufficiently pure enough, they may not be able to strongly also speak. So one is kind of like stuck. So how do we handle that situation?
Become more pure. I don't know of a better answer. I don't know of any other answer. Pray. But don't transgress etiquette. And you speak strongly and you don't have that purity, then, you know, you get a pushback. Someone goes the other direction. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Watch me. It goes on. Okay. So, in a moment, there Krishna Maharaj is going to make an entrance from this side door.